Dottotech is brought to you by London Drugs. Hello, I'm Steve Dotto, and this is Dottotech. We are glad you're joining us this fine day. This show, well, it's dedicated to helping you get the most out of your technology wherever you use it, be that at home, at school, or at work. Once again, this week we are podcast only, although rumor has it, confirmed rumor, I believe, that next week we'll be back on radio on AM 650 in the Vancouver area. So we're looking forward to that. Now, this week we do have a pretty interesting show lined up. We're going to be talking about, Jamie Olivier is going to join us talking about interactive television. I'm a little concerned about what's happening in the world of interactive TV. Don't quite get it. And Jamie Olivier is an absolute expert on the field, having been involved in interactive TV for well nigh on two decades, I think. So we're going to be talking to Jamie about interactive television. We're going to be talking with Rick Yeager about the new version of the Mac OS Mountain Lion, which is out in beta now. People are trying out, and he's going to be filling us in on what he thinks of it. Theo Horstall from London Drugs is going to be filling us in on a new class of notebook from Asus. And we've also got two other interviews. First up, we're going to be having Lawrence Koh, who is the vice president of Rogers. They've launched a new hockey app, well, a new streaming app, which is going to be focused on hockey. So we're going to be talking to him to start the show off. And then we're also going to be talking to Jillian Shaw. We'll talk about the best ways to watch hockey online, as well as we're going to be covering some of the news stories. Included in the news stories we're going to be talking about, Jillian, is the Instagram story, of course. If you've been following the news this past week, Instagram sold for some $1 billion bought by our friends at Facebook. And so that's going to be a story that we'll explore in some detail with Jillian. Taking a look at some of the interesting news that happened this week. First big Mac virus out there. There's about 1% of Macs, which is 600,000 or so Macintoshes have been infected by a virus. We've got a link to that on our site if you happen to be in the group that may be infected. It's a very easy way to determine whether or not you are. We also mark the passing Jack Tramiel, who is from Commodore, one of the principals in Commodore. He passed away, of course, Commodore back in the day, one of the real milestone computer companies, the Commodore 64, the VIC-20, the PET, all computers that really helped pave the way towards the kind of the computer revolution that changed the world through the 80s and the 90s. So we will miss him and salute all of the contributions that he made to the world of technology and computing. I'd also like to point out that if you drop by and visit our website, we have a great giveaway this month, actually. We are giving away a Slingbox HD, which is just a terrific tool. We'll be talking about it for the rest of the month. Well, last week we had a really good interview on just what the capabilities are. If you missed that, you can go back and listen to last week's podcast. As we talked about the Slingbox HD, we do have one available that you may be the lucky winner of. You can only be the lucky winner if you visit dottotech.com and enter our contest. With the start of the NHL playoffs, Canadians are consumed with all things hockey, at least this Canadian is, and the folks at Rogers think that many Canadians are. They have launched a new app which will allow me to watch hockey games on my smartphone. Lawrence Koh is joining me. He's the Vice President of Current and Next Generation Video and Entertainment at Rogers Communication, the longest job title that I think we've ever had on the show. Congratulations, Lawrence.
Great. Glad to be here.
It's a proud moment for you, isn't it?
It is. Now, listen, one distinction I wanted, it was that.
Well done. Now, I'm kind of excited because, of course, being based in Vancouver, we're consumed with hockey coming up. You guys in Toronto, I'm amazed you guys in Toronto are coming up with something for hockey right now. It's surprising.
Well, luckily the Senators are here, so the East Coast gets to celebrate too.
Oh yeah, well let's hope for them. They're in tough as well. Tell me about the new app.
So the new app allows you, starting tonight, to stream CBC's Hockey Night in Canada, so you'll be able to watch the NHL playoffs. It's a great thing for sports fans. As you said, you know, Canadians are very passionate about hockey, and starting tonight, we'll be able to catch the playoff games. So if you're out, happen to be away from your TV, you'll be able to watch every game on CBC's Hockey Night in Canada on your smartphone.
Now, on smartphones, that's Android and iPhone?
It's Android, iPhone, and Blackberries as well.
And Black Price as well. Now, the app itself is called Rogers Live. You can find it on whatever app store your flavor of smartphone is. It's a Rogers-only service?
It's a Rogers-only service, so you'll be able to download the app from the app stores that you mentioned. If you have a Rogers wireless phone, you'll then be able to access when you subscribe to the service, which is $5 for each month.
Okay, so for $5 a month, I get to subscribe to the service. And it looks like this isn't a... I don't mean finished as in polished, but I mean I don't think it's a complete product because it looks like you're going to be adding more content as we go along.
Yep, continuously we always look to add content. So as of today, you'll be able to start watching the NHL playoffs. But already you can watch the Blue Jays, you can watch the Raptors, so it's great for sports fans. We're also able to stream the Sportsnet channels, Sportsnet 1 and City News as well, so you can catch up on news.
So lots of your different properties now streaming through to our smartphone. The total cost is $5 a month until October, and then the pricing plan changes slightly?
The current plan right now is $5 each month for unlimited viewing until October.
Now, does this count on my data bucket, on my mobility plan?
So this is separate from your current data bucket. So what we're trying to do is give you data certainty. So for $5 a month, you can watch on your smartphone. So it's separate from the data bucket.
That to me is a big deal. I think a lot of people will resist using their smartphone because they don't want to use up their existing data plans. But if this is separate from it for the $5 a month, that's looking like a pretty good deal.
I think as we've spoken to customers, a lot of people are uncertain how much data essentially it takes to stream video. They have no idea how much it's taking up of their data bucket. So this will give them certainty around that, as well as giving them access to some great content.
So currently you've mentioned all of the different Sportsnet channels. So you can actually watch regularly scheduled television on Sportsnet. Plus you can pick up the Jays broadcasts, CBC NHL playoffs, and the Raptors broadcasts.
That's right. So all summer long you'll be able to catch all 162 of the Jays games. The Raptors are playing for a little while longer, so you'll be able to catch the Raptors. And then as of today, you'll be able to catch the NHL playoffs on CBC's Hockey Night in Canada. So it's great.
So quick prediction. I'm only concerned about the LA-Vancouver series. Who's going to win?
Well, I'm going to have to go with Vancouver as a true Canadian.
Well said, sir. And what about Ottawa?
I'm going to go with Ottawa, too. We'll go with the number one seed, the number eight seed, Canadians all the way.
But you know what? This is a technology show, so we shouldn't really be talking hockey. But the Senators did have a winning record against the Rangers this year.
That's right. That's right.
Yeah, so it's looking good for them. That'd be great if they could go all the way through. And I won't put you on the spot by asking you to pick an Ontario team versus a BC team if should they happen to meet in the final. But we'll be watching it on our phone.
That sounds great. I'll remain neutral on that one for now.
Well said. This has been Lawrence Kuhi, is the Vice President, Current and Next Generation Video and Entertainment at Rogers. Thanks for your time.
All right. Thanks, Steve.
Joining me online now, Jillian Shaw, the technology columnist for the Vancouver Sun. How are you doing, Jillian?
Hi, Steve. I'm doing well. How about you?
I'm doing good. I want to talk to you about Instagram, though, because we haven't talked about it yet, and they just sold for $1 billion to Facebook. What's your take on that?
My take on it, Steve, is that you and I are in the wrong business. this company, 13 employees, no visible revenue, or at least no revenue that we know of, and they sell for a price that amounts to $77 million per person in the company.
So that's not bad.
That is not bad. But of course, now the question is, and this has analysts and commentators all kind of weighing in, was this a great move and a really strategic move by Facebook, or was this the dumbest thing on earth and signaling the tech bubble bursting? That's the question.
Well, it depends what your currency is, right? It depends what the currency that you're working in is. If it's dollars and cents, $1 billion for this app is absolutely ridiculous based on the reasons you just indicated. It's not that, it's not making money. But if your currency is engagement, is social media, is having people that engage with your technology and having them use your tools over and over again and become reliant on your services, well, that's a different story.
Well, and of course, Facebook needs the users because Facebook is all about ads. I mean, that's their revenue. So they don't have ads and they don't have user database with all this great information that we share with Facebook unless people sign up. One of the things that Instagram has a very strong community. And there, you know, there are those who have said that Instagram was, you know, was just necessary for Facebook for its mobile photo app, that Facebook was actually threatened by this very tiny startup. And of course, there's also the fact that Facebook, I mean, this isn't a $1 billion and, you know, $100 bills shelled out, Steve. This was a stock, probably the breakdown was never given, but probably a large portion of that was not cash, but was stock.
It was going to be Facebook stock. But still, a home run for the Instagram people. The Instagram community, a little concerned.
Instagram, I saw some really damning, reaction from the Instagram community. Some feel that they were really sold out. I think you have to be kind of prepared for that, Steve, when you're taking, you really like a free service and you like it in its simple, non-revenue kind of model form. And then when it gets taken over by somebody like Facebook or a company like Facebook, which is known for aggravating, shall we say, its users from time to time over its somewhat cavalier approach to privacy. So,
yes.
You know, that that is just maybe one of the risks you take.
Well, I kind of sit on the fence on this. A, to the user community that's had a free service complaining that the people who built it now have security for the rest of their lives, tough darts. But
exactly.
But now, you know, that community has to try and hold Facebook's hold Facebook accountable, and we're finding people all over trying to hold Facebook accountable, including right in our backyard.
Well, right here in Vancouver, there is a woman who's actually suing. She has launched what she hopes will be certified as a class action lawsuit against Facebook. Not, of course, the first that this social media giant is facing, and it actually faces a similar one in the U.S., but it's over its sponsored stories. Now, I don't know whether you noticed, Steve, if you like something on Facebook, say you like your local pizza joint or whatever, your photo and your name and everything could appear on your friend's Facebook, on your friend's Facebook timelines, with you seemingly promoting that service or that product. Now, some people are fine.
It could become embarrassing. It could become a whole bunch of things.
Well, you got to be careful what you like, Steve.
Yeah,
because
so if you,
all of a sudden, you might be appearing promoting, you know, something that you didn't even realize. Because, of course, the problem is that for a lot of Facebook company sites or corporate sites, the kind of the barrier to entry is you have to like the site. So say, even with the Canucks, if you want to play in the Canucks contest, you actually have to like the Canucks Facebook site.
Well, and so then Facebook was then taking that information, and you might not even know that your face is being attached to that product.
Exactly. And that,
no permission.
That is the argument of this woman. And, of course, it's caused some controversy among Facebook users themselves, because when I wrote this story, Steve, a lot of people got back and said, well, I don't know what she's complaining about. She can actually opt out of that. But And that's another very confusing thing about Facebook. You can opt out of some things with Facebook, but these sponsored stories, no, you definitely can't. But that is something that's not clear at all from their site.
Yeah. And we're seeing increasing insistence on buy-in, on that liking process. For example, I'm getting a series of feeds lately from people, so-and-so is reading this article, and it looks like an interesting article. If you click on the article, you can't get into it unless you join whatever club it is or like whatever thing, you know, whatever publisher it is, which then gives a de facto endorsement. And so I just ignore all of that stuff and just bypass it completely. You're mentioning how it could become embarrassing. All right, I was just thinking back, you know, one of my favorite all-time series of YouTube videos on Facebook. I don't know, did you see the Jurex, I think it's Jurex condom commercials? They're hilarious. They're basically balloon animals done with condoms and doing rude things and popping and stuff like this. But they're really, really witty and really funny. And back in the day, I would have liked that. I would have clicked, I like this, because they're funny. But I could just see what would happen today if they were posting those and people clicked like. All of a sudden, your name would be coming up saying, Steve Dotto likes Jurex condoms.
Well,
even though I liked the videos, not necessarily the product.
Exactly. Well, even as this lawyer who's taken on this class action lawsuit pointed out, she said, well, even sometimes she puts a photo of her kid up as on her Facebook page as her, mm-hmm. kind of ID photo, which people do. I mean, you don't always just put your own photo, but you put things or people that are, you know, special to you, or your photo of you with someone else. So, yeah, you can imagine even something as simple as, you know, maybe she likes a, you know, neighborhood bar that her, presumably, you know, the two-year-old wouldn't be expected to be frequenting. So it can lead to all kinds of confusion.
And it will be interesting to see, just because, as you mentioned, you know, Facebook does have a slightly cavalier attitude towards all of this privacy, or not slightly, they have a dramatically cavalier attitude towards it. And so we'll see if these lawsuits cause them to take a step back. It'll be interesting seeing those folded in against the Instagram community now being part of it, and Facebook looking to leverage that, because they are ultimately not just interested in the users, they're going to be interested in finding a way to monetize the investment that they put in Instagram. Should be interesting times for the next little while in the Facebook community.
It will be, and I think the privacy commissioners are always keeping a close eye on Facebook. But with this class action lawsuit, I talked to the privacy commissioner's office in Victoria here in British Columbia, and it's certainly on their radar. So you're right.
Good. Now, we'll only keep one eye on privacy because we've got our other eye on hockey.
It's a busy time. You know, you have to multitask in this playoff season, Steve, that's for sure.
Now, just before you, we had on Rogers. They've got a new app, but you've just done a story on all of the best streaming apps for people to watch hockey games when they aren't in front of their big screen TV or at a bar.
Well, actually, it is good news. I mean, the Rogers streaming that you have just been talking to the Rogers folks
Rogers
about,
Rogers Live.
That is excellent, and because, and of course, you can see the games. You can see the games on your mobile devices, and it's not the only way. So for other customers and non-Rogers customers particularly, mm-hmm. There's also CBC's own Hockey Night in Canada app. Now, of course, CBC has the broadcast rights for the playoffs, and for Canada. And of course, in earlier years, this caused some problems. And I know a little bit about it because I was away last year for part of the playoffs. And I can tell you, Steve, trying to tune into the games from a computer or your iPhone from around the world can be a bit of a challenge. So I was really glad to see CBC's updating its playoff app. But of course, you can only watch that when you're in Canada. So that's that's another thing. But there is, and that's at $9.99 for the entire series. All the games in the playoff series are $9.99 with the CBC.
So that would
app.
Be so CBC has the Canadian teams in the first two rounds, and I think Sport or TSN carries the other series. And then starting in the third round, I think CBC will have every game. So you'll be getting most of the games.
I think you'll be getting all the games. As far as I know, Steve, I think it's a pretty comprehensive. But then of course, once the minute, if you travel outside of Canada, say you're flying over to France for a couple of weeks and you want to make sure you don't miss the Canucks or some other team, if it happens to be your favorite, there is a more expensive solution, but it's one that's good for more than hockey. And I really like it. And it's the Sling Box, which is that little set-top box that you hook up to your computer. And then when you leave home, wherever you are, whether, you know, you happen to be, you know, staying at Whistler for a ski weekend or staying in, you know, London, you can pick up your computer on your computer or your iPad or your iPhone and turn on your home TV just as if you were holding the remote control.
Now, we did a story on the Sling Box last week, and it's like, we didn't set this up. Jillian, you didn't know that. We're actually giving a Sling Box away this month.
Well, I'm signing up for that competition. Well, I have a Sling
Box, it's the good
but
one.
I don't have the new HD one, and
yes,
and I have
the
Sling
the
Box apps. And of course, well, as you know, it's more than, you know, they're great for hockey, but for people who travel a lot and want to keep track of their Canadian shows that they, you know, want to be able to tune into their home TV. Excellent idea. So a return on investment for the playoff games, well, you just have to cross your fingers and hope the Canucks go all the way through the playoffs, because it's a little expensive if they don't make it past the first round. But, you know, I'd probably use it for a lot of other things.
And we should mention that NHL has Game Center as well, which you can sign up for, and I think on the iPad. Now, the thing about the Rogers app is it's great on the iPhone or the Android or the BlackBerry, but it's not a iPad app, A, and B, it's not available to non-Rogers customers. So, but if you are Rogers customers and you have a smartphone and you want to watch the game on that, I think it's the best deal going. They told us it's $5 a month. And the key thing there, Jillian, is it doesn't use your data bucket. So even if you have a small data bucket, the streaming, the data that's streaming down doesn't count against your data. I think that's a key buying feature in that particular app.
That is. And that's not something, of course, CBC Hockey, the CBC Hockey app, you can use it on any iOS device. They have, interestingly, Steve, they haven't created one or produced one for Android yet. It's in the works, but no word on whether it's going to become available during the playoffs, so you can't count on that. The NHL Game Center, of course, that's a bit of a problem because now with the playoffs starting, even if you have that app and you get the games, there's a 48-hour delay for all the games.
Oh, really?
Because of this broadcast right. So you are actually you're limited in the number of ways you can get those games streamed. And so far, I'd say the two are the CBC Hockey app and the Rogers one that carries the CBC feed. And then, of course, your third option is to go to a Slingbox.
Time to set up a Slingbox today before the game.
You have a few hours. All you have to do is just, run out to London Drugs, grab your Slingbox, hook it up, and you'll be set.
Yep. Bob's Drunkle. Now, we're pre-recording this because guess where I'm going to be tonight?
Well, I'll be tweeting back and forth with the virtual crowd that I sit in the Twitter stands and watch Canucks hockey.
I'm sitting in row two. Tonight.
You're actually at the game.
At the game, row two, and this is the first playoff game I've been at in a few years. So I'm looking forward to it.
Well, I'm going to be looking for your photos.
Yeah, I might just post. Yeah, I'm not an Instagram member. I've never signed up, but I might just
take a
few shots.
Good time to try.
I might sign up now. I think maybe I will try it and stream it from it. That's a good idea. I might just do that. So you can go directly from listening to the show right now to checking out my Twitter feed on the hockey game. And I sure hope the Canucks do good against those dastardly LA people. So since you are interested in hockey, I'll let you make your prediction.
Oh, my prediction? Well, Canucks all the way, of course, Steve.
Well said. Well said, Jillian. Jillian Shaw is the technology and aka sports reporter for the Vancouver Sun. Thanks so much for your time, Jillian.
A pleasure. Thank you.
Joining me now, a longtime friend of mine, Jamie Olivier, who is now an interactive TV consultant. Now, Jamie and I go way back. Jamie actually is another one of my old friends from comedy. How are you doing, Jamie?
I'm great, Steve. Thanks.
It's good to have you. It's good to have you here on board. Now, going from a world of stand-up comedy, now you're an expert in interactive TV. How did that happen?
Well, it's sort of like being a professional philosopher because it's very obscure. Well, the reality is writing a joke and interactive TV are closely related because when you write a joke, you're basically bridging a punchline between two premises. And it's the same practice with regard to interactive TV because what you're trying to do is bridge a gap between stories or in the narrative, you're trying to create an opportunity for the audience to interact. And so I saw years ago a real strong synergy between comedy and interactive TV.
You know, it's kind of ironic. A couple of weeks ago on the show, do you remember Paul Chatto?
Yeah.
Yeah, Paul was on the show. He has a publishing company, a website publishing company in Toronto now. So it seems like we should just see how many former comics we can get together from the technology world.
Yeah, really.
We should have like a reunion show and we should sit around and tell IP jokes.
Yeah, really.
IP as an interactive, internet protocol, not the other IP joke.
Incontinence, right.
That's what we need. So, Jamie, the reason I wanted to get you on is I am increasingly confused about what these folks in the broadcast world are doing with television. I'm seeing all of the major manufacturers of TVs talking about putting out these new TVs that have interactivity, and they seem to think, in a lot of cases, that interactive TV means that I can watch YouTube videos or see what my friends are up to in Facebook on the TV screen while I'm watching it. And I'm not sure that's what's going to win at the end of the day.
Well, Steve, you're absolutely right because what they're trying to do with these connected TVs is utilize the remote control and basically put your computer on your television. So imagine browsing Facebook on your TV, not necessarily the ideal peripheral device to actually, you know, really meaningfully engage with YouTube. And the reality is, when people are watching TV on the big screen, they want to see stories, they want to hear narratives, they want to be taken away. And the reality is, they've developed all these connected TVs without really any sort of connection with storytelling. So it seems completely divorced from the way people actually engage, the way people actually want to hear stories. So they're just throwing something out there because it seems like a good idea.
Now, the term that I'm hearing more increasingly is multiple screen or dual screen interactive TV, with the idea being that the group is watching a large screen TV, but the individual is interacting with their personal device, be it an iPad, be it an Android tablet, be it their phone. That's got to be the way we're heading.
You know, it is, because the real challenge with interactive TV, and let me tell you, interactive TV has been a holy grail since the early 90s. They basically had PCs that would have a TV tuner, and then they're trying to figure out how you incorporate broadcast into the television program. But the reality is, it's the back channel. So I'm watching TV, I get it through my cable or satellite or whatever, but how do I have some sort of way to interact with that channel? And over the years, people have tried a myriad of things. Back in 1999, I built CTVnews.com, and we had probably the only 24-hour web TV, interactive TV news service in the world. So if you had one of those old-fashioned web TVs, you could actually engage the interactive element on CTV News, on NewsNet, and then this dashboard would slide up and you'd be able to do all this stuff. But the back channel was managed by the web TV, and it was all on a dial-up, believe it or not.
But that was 13 years ago, people weren't ready for it yet.
They weren't. I mean, there's a few early adopters out there, but it still wasn't really meaningful. And I sort of use the analogy of the old railway tracks, because in the old days, believe it or not, they had different gauge railways. So
they did.
Trains couldn't necessarily travel everywhere because the gauge wasn't uniform. So, and no one's done this the same way, including all the MSOs in the U.S. and the cable companies. So people have no way to have a back channel to the content. So now, lo and behold, the handheld devices like smartphones and iPads and stuff have actually naturally facilitated the perfect back channel to make interactive TV a reality.
And is part and parcel of that it's finally getting also in the hands of people who just aren't trying to sell things but are actually concerned with the consumer experience? Because in the early days, a lot of interactive TV was, let's sell the shirt that Steve's wearing.
Yeah.
And let people order that from Land's End or something.
Yeah,
like
Jennifer Aniston's sweater. That was the big one.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Well, that's better than Steve's shirt. That's a better choice.
Let me think.
But are they finding ways to engage me more in the content?
Well, there is still a huge, let's say they're starting to get there. There's Fox has got his sync to screen technology. AMC has got a great, it's not so much sync to screen, it's more of a second screen experience in that, like with The Walking Dead, one of my favorite shows.
Let's first of all describe, let's not go by that term, sync to screen. What's that?
Well, sync to screen actually, it's defined as having a mobile device or a handheld device which actually then gets synchronized to the TV broadcast. And there's a variety of ways of doing that. There's actually a really great a number of them available on iPhones and on smartphones. And you basically hold your phone up to the TV and it listens to the broadcast. I think this is based on some Yahoo technology. And it then understands what channel and what program you're watching, and then it will synchronize the screen you're holding in your hand with what's going on television. Very, very
cool. And we're going to start to see that showing popping up in things like Facebook, where it'll say, Jamie is watching the Canucks hockey game tonight, And then it'll be kind of a status update type thing, and then it'll start to feed information, and it'll start to build an instantaneous community of other people that are sharing the experience at the same time as
yeah,
you.
Yeah, I think so. Well, that's one of the Steve, that's a good idea. We should pitch that to the Canucks. But, you know, because the reality is actually doing that is still very complicated. But I think the reality is, getting back to your original question, what's happening, it's still about – it's still more about the advertising than the content, because the challenge is advertising is more naturally suitable for interactivity where, I'm interested in that. I'm watching a show and it's a science show, or it's a show about, you know, green homes. You know, I want to learn more about that. You know, it's a natural sort of, they call it a telescopic opportunity where I can go and learn more about a specific thing. The real challenge, though, is with a TV show, where there's a fictional show or a narrative show, is actually somehow figuring out a way to engage people on the second screen. And live events, like sporting events, that's sort of the ideal thing, because basically you're engaging with other people who are also a part of a live event, which is cool. But then what do you do?
There's two different. If you have a scripted show, you could build interactivity around it and plan for it in advance, which would be great. Except there's a linear nature to those sorts of shows.
Well, yeah.
So it becomes increasingly difficult to engage. I mean, most of us with our second screen are simply jumping on IMDb and saying, what did we see that actor in before, or arguing about with our significant other what movie they were
in. Well, Steve, you've nailed it on the head, because I think second screen is actually a result of organic behavior. So people are actually watching TV. We're watching Breaking Bad, and he's talking about burning through this steel door with a bunch of material he gets out of these Etch-a-Sketches, and it's like, is that possible? So we go online while we're watching the show, and we're actually getting all this additional information, but we're actually researching it,
leveraging in myth
and bringing it absolutely, and we're bringing it all in together to enhance our experience. But this is happening completely organically, and I think it's something like 80% of people who are on are watching TV or watching a show are also on their smartphone and their iPad. So I think developers, I certainly have seen this opportunity. People are saying, "Wow, this is what people are doing. Let's figure out a way to make it easy and also a way to make money doing it."
Yes. And money is going to be difficult, because they have to engender trust first, and we don't trust them yet.
No. And that's really the bottom line, because the types of second screen experiences, not to confuse things, there are two. There's sync to screen and then second screen. And the sync to screen, I think, is really the most exciting, because my mobile device is actually going to have some sort of relationship that evolves as the show is evolving. And then the second thing is just a more of a passive second screen experience, like The Walking Dead. AMC's got this great second screen experience. So while you're watching the show, they release or they publish incrementally these packages to people who have tuned in either on a notebook or on a Mac or on a smartphone, and they can actually do things like see extra clips, or they all vote, who do you think is going to die in this next scene. It's kind of fun, but at the same time, it's like, they're still not quite there.
It hasn't quite reached prime time. And then we look at the sporting events, which is, again, a natural, but they won't. The problem is preparing something far enough in advance to be able to anticipate what's happening to create an event around it.
Well, absolutely. And, I worked with the Canucks for 3 years, and with their social media, and basically helped design what they do with social media. And my big vision was something so simple, which would be having a way to synchronize people who are all watching the game who aren't in the arena to applaud at the same time. So we score a goal, and then you hit your applause button on your second screen, and then all of a sudden you've got a million people who are watching at home actually engaging in the event, and maybe you've got like a some sort of sample applause track that people can hear, and it's like, wow, the people out there, I can actually hear them in stadium, and there's this real cool dynamic that I don't think has ever really happened before. But that's like one thing, and it's still like, okay, what else?
Wow. And you know, that's, to me, when it comes down to well, I guess we're completely a hockey nation here. The opportunity or the desire to interact, to be able to trash talk with the opposing fans, etc., is something that I think I might want to engage in, but I'm not 100% positive, because I also like the privacy. And that's the other big issue around interactive TV, is in order for it to, I think, really take off, is there has to be some sort of sense of community. Like you're talking about the applause, which means that you're being measured, you're being seen, you're engaging in some way with the group activity, which is the great thing about being in the arena. But the nice thing about watching the game at home is nobody's bothering.
That's right. And you can freak out and no one cares.
Yeah, you can freak out. No one cares. But also, you're not being judged. You know, if I happen to be addicted to the Housewives of Vancouver,
and, are you?
You know, I've got. No, I'm not at all. I'm not. But if I was, I wouldn't want you to know.
I can believe that.
So they're going to have a challenge of getting people engaged in actually saying that they watch this kind of stuff and kind of. I know that they're going to want measurement to create momentum. They're going to want something like Facebook likes. They're going to want to have that ability to be able to say, so-and-so is watching it, create that measurement in that event out of their show. That's what's going to create momentum for them. That's what's going to cause growth.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, the real challenge is, as you say, figuring out a way to make this all meaningful and be able to monetize it and have a way to really, you know, add value to the experience. So it's not just like an event with interruptions, because that really is the challenge right now, is, you know, how do I do whatever I'm doing in terms of interactive opportunities and make the experience even better.
So we have mentioned, I don't know how many different groups, Jamie. Who's going to be the one that makes this happen? We've got the content creator, the people that produce the TV show Walking Dead or Game of Thrones. We've got the broadcaster that distributes it. We've got Showtime, or we've got CBC, or we've got some other network. We've got the television manufacturers. We've got the cable companies and the broadcasters. We've got Apple sitting there with iTunes and sitting there with all of those tools. We've got the social media companies of especially Facebook, who just bought Instagram. So they're very into acquiring and building extra value. Who's going to be the one that's going to make this, create the first killer app that's going to make it, that's going to make Second Screen from some way pop into all of our consciousness?
Well, you know, that's a really good question. And what's sort of cool and scary about this is that it's possible that someone can come into this ecosystem and actually own the consumer, which means that they get in between the content owner and the screen and the audience. And there's a, for example, there's a technology out there called Peel. If you go to peel.com, and I know you may, if you have a security,
P-E-A-L?
P-E-E-L, Peel, as in lemon peel. Mm-hmm. And you'll get a browser alert because, you know, Peel refers to strippers. And I think that it was at one point a stripping website, but they've now...
Actually, mine came up clean.
Oh, it did. Okay, well, I actually got the alert on mine, but you can imagine the confusion. So Peel is an app and also a piece of hardware that looks like a lemon or an orange. And then you basically synchronize this app to the Peel device, and it's a little infrared blaster, and then you basically point it at your TV. And then what happens is Peel owns the TV. And what they do is you can put all your personal preferences in, what you like, what you're looking for, and it will actually do, much like a mood logic kind of strategy, recommend shows and content and bring it all to you, because it's like an intermediary between you and all the media that's out there. It's really, really, it looks like a really cool piece of technology.
So it's kind of doing a little bit of what Amazon and those people do. If you buy a book, it's recommending other books that others have bought, saying, if you're enjoying this show, you might enjoy this show because people that watch it are going over and watching this. So they're owning the data of the consumer of what they're watching. It's kind of like BBM, measuring the Bureau of Broadcast Measurement, but way more accurate.
Well, and also there's advertising, right? So this is really what makes it really serious as a player, because this this type of concept means that they can own the advertising opportunities in between the broadcaster and the consumer. So that really, and it's all
because you're putting in your profile information. So they're kind of like Facebook or LinkedIn ads. They know a lot about me, and theoretically, they're going to then deliver ads that are relevant to
me. Absolutely. And it really is, you know, and that's something that really solves a lot of problems. It's very universal. You know, you just throw this thing on your coffee table. And because the challenge is how you actually sync up your mobile device or your handheld device with the broadcast. So they've come up with a really innovative way of doing that. And there are other ways, like I mentioned, like the Yahoo technology that you hold your phone up to the TV and it can synchronize it. There's other ones that we're going to use, you know, different forms of technology. And there's a number of other things like, you know, QR codes, for example. That's sort of the mechanical way, in a sense, of synchronizing it. I'm looking at some technology to do that as well. There's GetGlue. There's Miso, which is sort of a user-generated thing. There's IntuNow. So there's a whole variety of apps out there that you can download on your iPad, and then it allows you to engage with the broadcast. But once again, you know, what are you doing? You know, what is it meaningful? Is it interesting? Is it adding to the actual experience of watching a show? I think sports is definitely a kind of a natural fit. But, you know, when it comes to, you know, making a show like The Walking Dead better, then, you know, that's a challenge.
Mm. Jamie Olivier is an interactive TV expert. His website is at www.itvactive.com. We'll have a link to it on our site. And Jamie, I have a funny feeling that this conversation is one that we're going to have often over the next couple of years.
Sounds great, Steve.
Okay, you have a good day,
sir.
We'll
see you on my second screen.
Yes. Theo Horstall is my guest from London Drugs. And Theo, when I asked you what you wanted to talk about this week, you told me you wanted to talk about notebooks, and I yawned. And then you said, no, I want to talk about small 11-inch notebooks. And I yawned again. I said, we've done the netbooks, and we've done the Air, Macintosh Air. But you said, no, but there's a new kind of class of small notebooks or a new way of using them. So tell me what's compelling about 11-inch notebooks today.
Well, I think, you know, going back a few years, netbook was a huge craze, you know, 2-3 years ago, because it offered a small, very portable, small size screen, but yet you're able to run most of the things you could usually run in Windows, you know, the connections, Skype, things like that. But
where it ended up is it ended up next to the TV set in many people's rooms so that they could multitask watching TV.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think for a lot of that functionality gave way to smartphones and tablets and different things like that.
Yeah, the iPad really impacted that.
But one of the things that was discovered, and you know, we still sell them today, but one of the things that was discovered in the market is that people thought these were full functioning computers and they had all the horsepower of a regular computer just in a small package. But I think what people understood very quickly is that they weren't powerful enough to run a lot of the things they wanted to run. So
they were a little underpowered, so, and their keyboards were a little small.
Yeah, keyboards were small. There's a lot of, I think, again, people had expectations that perhaps weren't being met. And what happened as a result is a lot of the netbook sales sort of, simmered down quite a bit, and regular size notebooks started gaining traction again. What happened
was the price of the regular size notebooks dropped as well.
Right.
Because,
I was going to say one of the things that people, the industry kind of forgot is that the people that bought these for the original purpose, that they were small, they were light. And instead of lugging around a big, huge notebook that was, very heavy and, caused your back problems, people wanted something small. They wanted something very simple to use, but yet they still wanted to be able to run all of the things they were used to running on their regular size notebook. So what happened was is that AMD, they're a processor company, came out with a form factor that addressed that. So they call this platform, here's a name for you, they call it Brazos. And really, at the end of the day, what that means is that they've combined a video and a CPU, a central processing unit, into a single chip. And the benefit of that is that you now have a processor that runs off low voltage, so you can run a very long time battery. But also, you don't have this, you can actually now run high def video because the graphics and the processing are all on one chip. So at the end of the day, you have a small notebook, 11.6 inches. You have a processor that's capable of running high def video, it's running, capable of running Office, doing your email, things online. And enough, you know, RAM and hard drive space. This is a full functioning computer that you can, you know, fit in very small places.
So the key is that you're not giving anything up. This new Brazos technology?
Brazos is the name of the platform that AMD comes up with. But really, you know, you don't need to know what that name is. It's a description of what, you know, the processor and the video.
But it's processor and video card in one.
Yeah, and they've coined a new term in the industry called APU. And what that basically is it's a graphics and processor chip all in one.
Okay. Yeah. Now, so what's the price point of these 11-inch? Because we have 11-inch notebooks like the Apple Mac Air, which are not inexpensive.
Yeah, well, these are under $500.
Oh,
yeah. So
they're kind of priced very close to where the netbooks were, just a little bit more.
Yeah, it's a little bit more, but you know, you get what you pay for in this particular case. And actually, just on that topic, this time of year, being in April. Pretty much running through for as long as I can tell, there'll be a promotions to do things like adding Office. You can get an Asus 1225B, which is a model of computer in this platform with Office on it, all for under $500. It's a perfect solution for a second computer, for even your primary computer. You know, keeping in mind that it is a smaller size screen than you normally are perhaps used to on a notebook. But it is fully functional,
and so that includes Microsoft Office. Uh-huh. Now, if you are looking at the notebook, it does have a full with that graphics card. You can output to a large screen monitor, so you can plug it into a monitor.
Yeah, you can plug it into a TV. Even it has an HDMI output, so you plug it into any monitor or any high def television, plasma, LCD, whatever you have in your living room. With a simple cable, HDMI cable, and you can now output high definition video from various sources digitally right to your flat screen TV.
Now you must be giving up something in this size. So it has a hard drive. I'm looking at the spec sheet. It's got a 320 gig hard drive. So a nice big hard drive.
Right.
But I don't see a media drive. So it probably doesn't have a CD drive.
It does not. So,
yeah. Which is okay.
Yeah,
it doesn't bother
me. You'll notice
the
trend in the industry. A lot of computers don't have it. But given that this is probably going to be a second computer in your house or similar, it's networkable. It has all of the wireless networking. Mm-hmm. So you could certainly transfer files from any other computer that you have. Or, you know, USB key. There's lots of different ways to input that into your computer.
It's not quite as light as I thought it might be. It's just over 3 pounds,
yep.
But that's still light by as far as carrying around. It's a lot better than carrying around an old 15-inch notebook. And what do you get out of the battery life? What do you expect?
Well, the average that they're saying is around 8 hours, so full day
okay.
battery life. You can certainly get more if you're not, if you're not running high def video all the time. And I've seen in some cases you can get 10 hours out of it.
And the display itself, even though it's a small 11-inch display, it's very high resolution. It's saying that it's WXGA,
yep.
So it's 1360 by 760 resolution of the display. So pretty high resolution. So it'll be good for watching video for sure.
Yeah, and in real world speak, for those who don't know what the resolution is, your typical television will display less quality than that. So it's certainly able to run any high def video that you have.
And you're getting a couple of $100 value in Microsoft Office included for the $500, so that's a pretty good deal if you're in the business world or a student, I imagine, an awesome option for students.
Yeah, we're advertising in our current flyer. We're advertising a savings of $80. So if you were to buy these two pieces separately, you would be spending $80 more. By combining them in this package, you save $80.
Yeah, and most people that want notebooks and Windows notebooks still want Microsoft Office. That's
sure.
still a big part of it.
Absolutely.
Well, that's it. Okay, well, you've got me interested. I see the point. You know, we didn't recreate 2 years ago talking about netbooks. So I give you kudos, Mateo. Thank you for that.
Yeah.
It does look like a good option. If you want more information on the Asus 1225B. You can stop by your local Lena Drugs, or they also have it in full details in their online, and on the website online at LondonDrugs.com. Theo, thanks for your time.
Thank you, and come in and ask us any questions you have at any of our locations.
Rick Yeager is my expert on everything Mac, and he's joining me now. How are you doing, Rick?
I'm pretty good. How's it going there, Steve?
I'm doing quite well, quite well. No complaints. Now, no sooner do I get my new operating system installed in the Mac than the Apple starts talking about a new version. Are they going to run out of cats
to name these things after? I looked this up. Okay, the public beta of Mac, the operating system we know as Mac OS X, was actually called Kodiak. So they started with bears.
Oh.
Then they went cheetah, puma, which I thought was a mountain lion, jaguar, panther, tiger, leopard, snow leopard, lion, and now mountain lion.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I think they have run out of cats. They're just coming up with new words for the same ones. But
well, maybe, you know, how much longer do we really have with a desktop operating system?
Yeah.
You know, that it's just going to be all one operating system, I think, at some point. Well, we're a few years away from that. But.
And by the looks of the announcement, and that's what we're going to get to here, what they're turning OS X into is much more like iOS.
Yeah. And Apple came under a fair bit of criticism, or a reasonable amount of criticism, when they released the last operating system, Lion, because interface-wise, it was much more similar to iOS 5 as far as navigation and adding gesture recognition, that sort of thing you would do on a touch screen. People were having issues with their mouse or with their trackpad on the computer. I reversed it. I went in and set everything back to the way it had always historically been on computers. I couldn't adjust.
Scroll down to go up, scroll up to go down. It's the way we've always done it.
Yeah.
And it doesn't really matter that it doesn't make sense. It's the way we do it instinctually now. So instinctively.
Yeah.
So.
And it's different touching a screen versus holding a peripheral.
Very true. And
so what about you? Did you now? Because I use the Magic Pad. I've got the trackpad. Now, did you leave it set or did you go back?
At first, I switched it back to the tried and true. But lately, I've forced myself to learn the new method, and it didn't take that long. But now I find if I go on a PC laptop, I'm messed up. So.
You're probably messed up on a PC laptop anyways, knowing your religious affiliation with all things Apple.
Too true. Too true.
Okay. So tell me, what are the new features that we can expect in Mountain Lion? First of all, when is it due out?
They're saying late summer, which is going to be like the very end of September or something.
Okay. Okay.
They always push it to the last day.
Okay. And what are we looking
at? We're looking at, like I said, a lot more iOS-ness. It's very pinned to iCloud. All of your email, calendars, contacts, documents are all going to be kept up to date by putting them up on iCloud and then back to your iDevices, assuming you have some. It'd be interesting to know if Mac users that have no iPhones and have no iPads even notice a difference in Mountain Lion, because so much of it is integrating it with your iDevices. Because the next item on it is Messages, which allows you, it's taking over for iChat, and it's allowing you to do kind of free text messages the way the Blackberries have for years, back and forth between your iDevices. Now you can have that on the Mac, and that's actually something you can download today as a public beta and try that out.
Now, how is that different from the Messages app that we have now on that? Like, I've got the newest version of the mobile operating system on my iPhone and my iPad.
Well, this is for the Mac itself. This is for your desktop. You're gonna.
Oh, so it's allowing my desktop to participate, because right now with my kids and their iPods and me on my iPhone or my iPad, we're messaging back and forth all the time. This is just bringing the Mac into that
into that
greater family. So it's not, there's no changes on any of the mobile systems. They're all going to be the same.
No, they're okay. Well, everything's always changing, but in this
okay, so this is bringing it to the Mac. Again, kind of a minor thing, cuz you know you always got your phone sitting next to your computer. I don't know if that's going to be a huge deal, but I guess it's going
to
be nice.
Yeah, and sometimes you kind of turn your phone off to concentrate on what you're doing, and this will just allow someone else to barge in and keep you distracted. So
okay. So really, there's nothing earth-shaking in Mount Lion. Is it going to be a full? Are they planning on charging me like $30 or $70 to upgrade again?
Probably. I would expect it to be the same $29 that they charged us for Lion. You've got messages. You've got reminders, which again is an iOS kind of system. Reminders, notes that syncs again. It's all iCloud and syncing with your iDevices. Notification center, which is pretty much what Growl, if you're familiar with Growl, what it did, but if you've noticed, that costs $2 now.
And so, Growl's really irritating because it's always kind of notifying me that it's out of
business. Yes, exactly. And
it was being updated all the time.
And now it's going to notify you that it costs $2 to buy it.
As I'm looking at what Apple says, another thing is they're integrating Twitter feed into the OS.
Right, so that anything you're looking at in any of the kind of participating applications, you can tweet about.
Okay.
You can select some text on a website and tweet about it. You can select a picture that you're looking at in iPhoto and tweet about it. And all of these things will integrate. Game Center is another thing they're bringing in. Gatekeeper. This is kind of the, if anything, is the big news for me. It's Gatekeeper.
Apple's becoming popular, and as the Mac OS is becoming more popular, more people are buying Macs. It is now becoming a target for viruses and hacking. Which the biggest reason. I mean, all about the security. We can rage all we want about how secure the Mac OS has been. The reason that the Mac OS has been so secure in the past is nobody wanted to hack it because there weren't enough out there.
True.
And that's changing.
Yes. And the iOS is extremely popular as well, but it hasn't been attacked to the same degree that the popular Windows platform has been attacked, and that is because Apple has locked it down by making the App Store the gatekeeper. Mm-hmm. For you to download anything to your phone without jailbreaking it, you have to go through the App Store as a developer and make that software up for the criticism of Apple. Mm-hmm. And it has to get through that scrutiny. They're kind of doing that with Gatekeeper. You can still set it so that there is no change whatsoever. You can download whatever you want and infect your Mac to your heart's content. But the default setting is that the app either has to come from the App Store or it has to come from an Apple developer with a specific ID, a developer ID. Mm-hmm. And
that makes sense. That seems to me to be a pretty good plan. But I'm wondering how many apps we're installing these days with everything moving to the cloud and to web-based. So, you know, that becomes increasingly less of an issue. You know, most viruses are now going to get in through some sort of a web interface as opposed to an app.
Yeah, and phishing scams will still be a problem.
Yeah, those sorts of things. So, I'm kind of ho-hum.
I'm kind of meh myself. It's not a new cat, and I guess that's part of the thinking behind the name is to be fair,
Lion was a significant change mainly because of the gestures and some of the other things that changed how we used the computer and how we interfaced with it. But it took me 3 months after everybody else upgraded to finally bite the bullet and upgrade. I might skip this one.
Oh my goodness. Oh, well, I'm gonna give it a go for the listeners.
Of course you will. Rick, you give everything a go. That's why you come on the show, that you can give it a go and I can go meh.
I take the bullet. We'll ask Rick
about it. We'll ask Rick about it. If you want Rick's reviews, his videos, his appearance, his regular appearances on Urban Rush, appman.tv is the site. Rick Yeager, thanks for your time.
Thank you, Steve.
And that is all the time we have this week for Dotto Tech. A reminder that Dotto Tech is brought to you by the good folks at London Drugs and MacStation. We appreciate their support. I need to thank all my guests this week. Jamie Olivier, Rick Yeager, Theo Horstall, Lawrence Cow from Rogers, and of course, Jillian Shaw. Next week, we will be back on radio, AM 650, on Wednesday night at 6 p.m. And a reminder, drop by our website. Don't forget that we're giving away one of those Sling Boxes, Slingbox HD. That's available at the website as well as podcasts, so you can listen to our previous shows and all of the different links to the different content that we talked about this week on the show is also available at the site. I'm Steve Dotto. Thanks for tuning in. We'll see you next time right here on Dotto Tech.